Welcome.
I was actually on. You were late.
Yeah, but you were on for me. Like, I don't know. I synced to you.
Okay.
I just, you know, I assumed when you were going to clap. Welcome to episode 3 of This Is a Podcast About, where we figure out we have technical issues and we're both dads who are tired and I yawned. And so Legs yawned just before we started.
You mentioned naps.
Yeah.
And that made me yawn. I've been fine. I've been wired. I've been in recording goblin mode that I've been up until 2 in the morning almost every day recording, even after yesterday's stream. We're recording this on Tuesday, by the way. Even after yesterday's stream, I still put in a solid 10 days of the next 100 days, and I had a full-on Dark Souls level boss fight in Minecraft.
Dude, I'm so excited for that video.
It's gonna be so good. I'm another 5 days past that. We're not telling them.
I'm not going to.
You all get to guess.
They're gonna cry some tears when they find out. Anyway,
it's gonna be good.
Anyway, the reason you're not gonna have me have my normal forward-thinking reactions and transitions this week is because I napped, and that's why Legs yawned. I napped. I woke up at. We're recording this at 10:30. I was supposed to be here at 10. I was here at 10. I mean 11. Good
it's
God! 11:30. It is that. Listen. 11:30. This is what I'm talking about.
It's 11:30 right now.
And I took a nap starting at 10. And woke up at 10:30. I was like, nope, I don't got this. So I went back to sleep till 11. And my wife woke me up at 11:02 and said, babe, you're late. And I was like, fuck.
Okay. But yeah. Okay. I'm going to hit you hot with this one.
Yes, go ahead.
On the Twitter.coms. Twitter.coms. I have received so far 8 notifications. Subscribe to Mr. Beast to get access to their exclusive content. $5 a month for Mr. Beast to tell you how to YouTube. His first subscriber was, of course, Elon Musk. And I've seen this on his profile. His profile bio actually reads Twitter Super Official CEO. So what's he providing? Which is interesting.
Yeah. Did you sub to it just to find out?
No, I didn't.
I feel like you need to just for content's sake.
I'm not going to. No.
Okay.
So he said point blank that he's going to run his subscribing on Twitter as basically a masterclass in how to YouTube.
So I'm subbing
on his Twitter
just for content purposes, and you will stay not. Okay.
Nah, I can't. Just like I'll never pay for Twitter Blue. If I'm getting a check mark, I'm earning it the old-fashioned way.
There is no old-fashioned anyway.
There is through an agency or an esports team or something like that who actually does affiliate verification.
I want you to think about the fact that the team at Twitter that's probably responsible for that is down to probably 2 people and is
no, it's just Jerry. Like it's just one guy
in the back right corner just Gremlin mode on his little Mac.
Hyped up on Red Bull. Just
look, Steve from Advanced 32 is officially. Listen, Jerry, whoever you are,
some other creator,
whoever you actually are, Jerry, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for all the hard work you do.
You are the one person keeping it actually real.
Yes.
On Twitter. But so here's my take, and I want to hear yours.
Yeah.
Because I have a controversial take, even amongst some of the circles that we're in.
Okay.
I don't think 100% of Mr. Beast's advice is applicable to people who are just starting their own careers. I think he at this point would give advice that is far too high level for you need to establish a channel first and then implement some of what he says. But if somebody's like, I'm going to sub to Mr. Beast for $5 a month, take his advice and start a YouTube channel from zero, I don't think it would be successful.
So I'm not sure. Like, there's a lot of ways to go with that. If you've watched as much Mr. Beast educational, quote unquote, content as I have, you know, things like his talks with YouTube product directors, talks with, you know, Colin and Samir, so on and so forth, all these things that he's done at this point, or people who analyze a lot of what he does, I think you're more liable, more recognizable, more sure. Like I am sure to a higher degree that you're going to actually find out that he doesn't give global grandstanding advice anymore. Oh, hello, lights.
My lights just went out.
I think they're disagreeing with you. Anyway, I don't think he does that. Every single time that I've heard him talk to a YouTuber and they'd be like, oh man, like, Jimmy, what do I do? He's like, I don't know. I'd have to look at your channel first. He's like, what works for me, what works for everything else, like, doesn't. But I think there are enough general things. Like, when he talks to people about starting a new YouTube channel, like building an audience, he goes, just post your first five things. You have no clue. He's like, you have no idea what your audience wants. You have no idea what you want. You have no idea what you're not good at versus what you're good at. And so he's like, just do the thing first. He's like, all of your beginning stuff isn't going to work. You're going to learn a whole bunch, but nothing matters until you've done like your first 100 videos. And so I think
the thing is, you're not going to get that in a random tweet that he's going to put out.
I don't think it's just a tweet, though. So Twitter just did a lot of things. If you remember, they now upped their tweet limit to 10,000 words. It is 10,000 words.
Gone even further.
And also, they're including super long form videos in terms of, I think it's up to 40 minutes or something like that. So, him doing a proper version of a masterclass in a subscriber group on Twitter doesn't actually seem that far fetched when you break it down like that, because that literally just becomes a subsection of what masterclass already does, because then he just does it in little tweet threads about specific things. And then people, if they come in and they ask questions underneath it, they get real-time response from Mr. Beast personally, or, you know, one of his Twitter, you know, handlers. And realistically, I'm pretty sure he actually personally tweets everything that goes on his Twitter. He just has a handler to feed him, like, stuff that needs to be responded to or whatnot, or he responds to it himself.
Or like, he'll put out tweets, maybe not directly to the platform, but to a person whose job it is to transcribe them.
Exactly. Yeah, but the point being is, like, edit or something. Yeah, but the point is, like, he has a workflow for that works. That very much is like exactly like you'd find in an actual masterclass setting. So, I'm not actually convinced that it can't work, mostly because of what I just mentioned. Like, I think the structure is there. Do I think it will be applicable for everybody? Of course not. Like, he himself would say that. And so, at least based on my understanding,
but that's
right?
That's what I mean. Unless you're trying to make a channel that creates content in his vein, that you could apply a lot of things one to one, because that's probably where he'd be speaking from. Like, I understand that there's best practices, right?
Yeah,
there are things that you could do and things that you could learn that you could do appropriately that give you a better chance. But it's funny you mentioned Colin and Samir. There was another video that they, because they're back on their main channel now, they're posting. And they posted something like, is creativity dead on YouTube? Which, honestly, I don't know. I kind of feel like even with the stuff that we try to do, the really out there ideas, the really creative ideas, the stuff that actually nobody has done before, doesn't seem to garner the same thing. Like, we're in a bit of a box in what we can do.
Yeah.
And we've established a formula. And we can erode at the edges of that, but you can't stray too far outside the box. Because then
it's Hollywood,
the audience that we built. No,
it's Hollywood typecast.
It's the same
problem. It's the same problem everywhere.
That's
though.
The
it's
same
like,
problem, but it's what I'm trying to say. Like, a lot of people are saying movies have become very samey and there's not a lot of new things. And there's so many remakes. Right now, it definitely feels like YouTube is almost remaking the reality TV show era of TV when that first hit.
But they have
about
to.
10 years ago, which is fine.
Yeah.
But if I think MrBeast had such a meteoric rise because when he was creating that kind of content, there was only like a couple other people who were doing it. He just did it better. He might not have been first, but he definitely tried to do it better. Or at least present it in a way that had better virality. Now, if I load up an incognito YouTube channel or an incognito YouTube tab, right, and I put in keywords from Mr. Beast video, I'll get his first almost certainly, and then there will be 20 to 30 people who did the exact same concept, either not as well or straight one-to-one ripped his script or his talking points or his events.
Yeah.
And it feels like that level of sameness and kind of, for lack of a better word, safety in creating content for some subsections and subgenres of the platform has led to the death of more creativity, or at least pushing to the fringes where its opportunity for success is a lot lower.
So I will say it this way. I think we have finally reached, again, and this happens with every bit of technology, right? We've caught the end of one section and caught the beginning of what the old medium was already doing. So for example, with films, right? We're watching the Hollywoodification of YouTube while forgetting that when Hollywood did its thing, there is still an incredible indie film community out there. Whether you're looking at Sundance has its problems, right? Degree, but like Sundance has its problems because of other things. But like there's like 30 or 40 independent film conventions and meetups and groups around the world that have incredible stories, incredible films that are shown that are like borderline Emmy nominated for a bunch of these smaller short films that you would never see.
Some of them were.
Right.
Everything Everywhere All at Once, an A24 film, finally like really popped off and got a lot of critical acclaim and attention for its work.
So my point being is like we're reaching that beginning of YouTube where you're going to have the Hollywood hitters. You're going to have the Mr. Beast who does his type of video the same way that Ryan Reynolds does nothing but like borderline romantic comedy, like that is very much his
or
brand
Deadpool.
Of it. But it's his
Deadpool.
Brand, right?
Yeah.
And then you have the Robert Downey Jr.'s who are very, very versatile, but can do a little bit of everything. And so think Casey Neistat. Like you're going to find these pockets. And it's not that necessarily creativity is dead per se. It's just there is a way to make a living. And there's a way to be a creative. And neither way is wrong. But like if you're going to push into it, you have to be very, very distinct in what you're doing for each one of them. Because you can still make a living doing one of them, but you're just not going to be the Robert Downey Jr. of YouTube, right? So,
yes. But the thing is, most of the advice I see focuses on playing to try to become or unseat or become the next blank.
Right, but that's new marketing cycle.
Overwhelming. No, I wholeheartedly get that. But the advice and the tutorializing and a lot of the advice columns I see, like the group that we're in, that one Discord that we're in, I love that it's not that.
Yeah.
Like very much this is a group of people who's like, we know how this works, but we're doing our own thing. And
we're
using all of the
tools. No is definitely in quotations, but yes.
It's all, yeah, we know what works
for us,
which is true for 99% of people. And if people actually say that unironically, they are BSing you.
Yes.
But it's like, we know all these tools that work.
Yeah.
Great. Now, how can we do something that is 5 degrees off of that? So we're not on the same trajectory as literally everybody else.
Yeah.
But we can be close enough that we can sort of siphon off a portion of this site, the traffic, whatever, for ourselves and not have to do exactly the same thing as what other people are doing.
So
it's very interesting.
I think
this is something that you get mad at me about sometimes about my head because I am definitely more of a creative than a career, despite wanting to be a career.
Yeah.
Creator.
I mean, but it's such a hard pull. It's such a hard pull because for people like you, who the creativity at some level is what drives you, making sure that creativity is almost within this box that you've put yourself in to then exponentially grow at the rate so that you can do the other things. I'm trying to remember the YouTuber who did exactly the opposite of what we're talking about, who forcibly beat himself into the not conformist hole in some sense. I don't remember his name. He's now featured on a whole bunch of stuff. Ali Youssef is another one who's like generalized advice about different things, a billion different things everywhere. Like, you know, whether it's sleep, business advice, YouTube, the whole night, like he does so much stuff. But the idea is there's certain people who got so good at what they do, they are able to break out of those molds. And it's getting to that point within your own current context and your own skill set that really leads you there. But you also have to have patience. You have to brute force it at some level. You have to know how the thing that you're doing works better than other people's so that you can get into spaces that other people wouldn't be able to get to. Like, and so it's not exactly easy. I think we're also to the point of the Mr. Beast idea reaching this apex of you need to be able to garner the best advice from multiple places and to parse it down. The same way that we're actually watching AI at some level is like, Mr. Beast's advice in that thread is probably going to be incredible at some level. And at the same time, you're going to have to understand how to parse it down. Because if you can't parse it down, then you're going to lose because you're going to try and apply things that don't work. And so the same way we have like AI and all this other stuff is like, sure, you have all of the information ever available at your fingertips, especially now that AI has this like augmentation that can help you do things that you could never do before. Right. And so now the real answer is, can you use the things that are available to you, only use the portions that work to make the thing that you're doing better? And if the answer is yes, you'll be you'll be good. You can move on. You can move forward. But saying that like it can't work and the overgeneralization is there, I just think isn't a measure of like Jimmy's ability to contextualize or not. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's very good at contextualizing. I've seen him do it too many times at shows.
Let me slightly adjust what I was saying.
Okay.
I wasn't trying to say that he couldn't contextualize.
That's fair.
I was trying to say if somebody spent $5 and saw his tweets and tried to do exactly what was said, if the advice given is do this, do this, do this, which granted that's not always his style, but
yeah,
there's probably going to be some degree of that to drive engagement with the posts. If somebody just is looking for a blueprint in subscribing for that, I don't think that is what they will get. And I don't think even if one is there, I don't think that would be a successful game plan long term, if that makes sense.
I think if the blueprint is general enough, the same way that you can make a marketing handbook, like a best practices guide, if that's what it is, then that's what it is. And that like that is as good as you can get without diving into somebody's personal life and personal story and campaigns and so on. And I think that's the problem. That is the problem with masterclasses. That is the problem with generalized advice. And so I don't think he can get away from that. And I don't think people can get away from the fact that it probably won't work for them one to one. Like
he did just teach a class at Harvard, so you never know. Maybe
I scrubbed through that image and like broke down like a bunch of the little pockets in the bubbles.
Yeah,
it was good stuff in the bubbles. So like six one away, half a dozen the other. But like he understands so much about general consumer pattern and culture
behavior.
That he can generalize a lot of things and be like, this is how you build around the thing that you have found yourself in. Like, and so if that's the advice, incredible. If the advice is, this is how much you need to post, this is how much you need to figure out about this, but make sure that it's within your niche and it's always qualified, because I don't think he's really ever not qualified things as far as I can remember. Yeah. He's very good about qualifying a lot of that stuff. And so I'm interested to see what it is. I'm probably going to sub just to find out what it is so we can come back in like 6 weeks and talk about it again and be like, so it was either hot trash or not.
It's just hilarious how many notifications I've gotten for it. That was the really thing that...
That's because Elon did something to it and Elon said, I'm going to push this because it was a meme before and now I'm going to keep it going, because he also made the logo for Twitter Doge for like 3 days.
Yeah, that was really that was a thing to watch, as somebody who still had like $20 in Dogecoin just sitting in an account somewhere. I went and I looked at it and I'm like, oh, it's up $10. Neat. And then I just left it because the effort of selling it, I'm like, I don't want it. No, it's not.
Anyway, so yes, I think it's going to be interesting. I do not think the success of some random Steve off the street picking it up, his advice, and making something go from zero to hero is going to work. Because I realistically, if it were going to be completely bluntly honest, I don't think most people have the amount of dedication, effort, and level of focus to be able to do it. I think if somebody was able to say, hey, I'm going to dedicate the next 12 months of my life to this for like 40 hours a week on top of whatever they're doing, probably.
40? Yeah.
Right? But you get what I'm saying? It's like if you were able to dedicate a second full-time job on top of it for a year, probably. Like, you could probably get some modicum of success, but like, are you going to be the next Mr. Beast? Absolutely not. Like, literally just by time hours put in. Like, that man, and this is the thing people don't realize.
That's a production company at that point. That's a production company. Yes. That is a movie studio.
But I want you to imagine. To
make 15-minute movies.
He talks about it that way. Like, but like, I want people to remember the amount of time that he talks about having spent from the time he was 19 the time when he was 25.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. It's like 7 years, right?
The fact that Mr. Beast is younger than me, like the fact that a lot of these,
he's about, he's a little older than me, not much older, but he's a little bit older than me. Like,
yeah,
like the amount of time,
get me sometimes.
The amount of time, I need people to realize that. Like, and this is, I'm gonna harp on this for 2 minutes here.
Oh, every waking hour, every single.
I want you to imagine 2 years of 18-hour days every single day on one thing. That is the same kind of bullshit that made Hans Zimmer into the person who he is, which was 18-hour days at a piano and an organ. Like, you.
Well, it's the 10,000 hours, right?
It's it is times three.
Very much. Well, but it is very much 100% the 10,000 hours to mastery idea or concept of, given the lack of any other external pressures or any other derivatives or sidetracks or blockers or blockades put into it, expertise in any near any activity is purely a matter of dedication and time.
Yep.
Most people don't have the opportunity to put that amount of dedication and time into it. And sometimes it feels like even at 35, I'm turning 35 later this year, 35 with two kids, is it too late for me to be a YouTuber?
Yeah.
And I ask myself that sometimes genuinely. It's like, is it too late for me? Because half the people who really you see meteoric success in are like half my age.
It's literally just because they had the time.
And it's
literally time,
and it's a different life, and it's very much just a different
different set of responsibilities.
And let me qualify: I would change nothing.
Yeah.
About that, anything that I have with my family, right? I love them with beyond a shadow of a doubt. But I always think, if meteoric success like that on YouTube is a very specific, for lack of a better term, genre of person or lifestyle that needs to be supported to see the top 0.1% to get to such a crazy level. And I don't need to be in that top 0.1%, so that's fine. I don't need to be up there. I'll ride at like top 10%, top 15%, top 20%, honestly, would probably still be amazing. We'll see. We'll work on it. Top 20% YouTuber. I'll make a t-shirt that says that at some point in time.
I mean, you have to figure out what your actual percentage is. So,
well, realistically speaking, if you think about the hundreds of millions of YouTube channels that exist, there is no way that we're not in like top 10% even right now.
That's a great question. Because there's a lot of faceless insanity.
If you go to Social Blade and you look at, and I'm talking every YouTube channel. Not just the big ones, but if you talk every YouTube channel, I think Social Blade has us in the top 60,000 on their site or lower.
Yeah.
And anybody who is obsessed with creating content online, that's me, will check Social Blade every so often. So their profiles are loaded in.
Yeah.
So anybody who's in the upper, say the upper quarter of that bell curve, as far as how things would distribute, is probably on there. So if you think about it, you think about the number of YouTube accounts that exist, and even you can pare it down, the number of YouTube accounts who have uploaded at least one video. How many tens of millions of accounts exist?
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where, I mean, very similarly, this exists on Twitch as well. If you have 10 viewers on Twitch, you're in the top 1 or top 3%.
Yeah.
If you have 25 viewers, you are in the top 1% of the platform. If you have 100 viewers, you're in the top 0.1% of the platform. And then the top 100 people is the top 0.00001% of all of Twitch. Or maybe Kick now, because let's just make a whole new round of bad decisions all over again, right?
I'm trying to find an actual proper ranking, and it doesn't really give it.
There's a ranking near the top of the Social Blade page for a channel, and it says Social Blade rank. It's a purely numerical hierarchy.
You're just under 950,000th.
So we're in the top 950,000th. So we're in the top million YouTube channels that exist.
No, there are currently 57.2 million channels in a higher position.
Wait, 950,000th.
Yeah.
I'm so confused.
Why I'm confused. So, for example, like in terms of subs, there are only 100,000 channels in a higher position. In terms of video rank, there's 207,000.
Oh, 95,000, not 950,000.
No.
Yeah, so...
No. I wish I could share the screen with you. It's a whole, I hate the ranking system. Basically, in the US, you are 1/1500th, it says, shared with 44 other people. So there's currently 20,000 channels in a higher position. And then worldwide, there's like 100,000 and 200,000 in terms of video views total.
So we're in the top 100,000 ish. Channels.
Yes.
Roughly trying to guess it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna get us a medal or something like that.
I'm just confused. You think about it, I wish I could check.
Statistically speaking, that has to be like a 10% or even a 1% statistic somewhere.
Yeah.
Or just because the curve goes near vertical as you hit that asymptote at the very top.
Yeah.
Right. It is a nonlinear progression. It is extremely that's what I'll check. Segmented. What are you gonna check?
Hold on.
This is amazing content for our audio viewers as you all listen to us type.
Nah, they can't hear me here. Okay. Yeah. So there's over 300,000 channels with a silver play button.
Okay.
So you're in that top 300,000 out of how many channels? How many YouTube channels are there? Let's find that out.
Let's Google this. While you're doing this, I am going to mention that...
51 million.
51 million. Okay. So we're at
you're
least
in the top 300,000. You're almost in the... That'd be what? Top 5% almost?
Yeah, that's... Because if you round 50... So 51. So 5,500,000 would be the top...
10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the top 3-ish. You're in the top 3 to 5.
Yeah. Half a million would be 10%. So yeah,
it's wild.
Yeah, so top 3-5% on the whole platform, and realistically, you look at the dearth between us and what people would actually think the top 3% of the platform is, and
well, you also have to remember technically there's a lot that like in that group that don't upload. That's just total channels, which means you have a Google account and blah 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 blah. But like. I wonder what the active channel number is, but that's a whole second.
That's
question.
What I mean. Like, even if, say it's half.
Yeah.
Say it's half, right? Say only 25 million channels have uploaded at least one video.
Yeah.
Then even at that point, it's still just above 10%.
Yeah.
Because it would be top 0.25 million
for
10%. That's wild to think about when you really break the numbers down. Because if you ask people what they think the top 3% is, they're talking about the dozens of millions or hundreds of millions channels, not somebody sitting at just around 450,000. Like it is near impossible to perceive.
Yeah.
And honestly, realistically speaking, there are channels that the audiences will likely never interact. I've learned so much more recently through the rise of the QSMP and the Spanish community. Like, I'd already seen so much about the Spanish community on Twitch and how they just
do. They are dominant.
Whole nother level. That's a whole
level. When Greg F broke the viewer record for his Fortnite stuff, when his Fortnite skin released, it was.
And then Ibai destroyed it a little bit after that. Yeah. And then there was an event that they just did recently in Minecraft.
Yeah.
Which absolutely blew it out of the water. And then the QSMP, so it's the Quackity SMP. I know the Q also stands for something else, but I'm trying to give a screen name that might ring a bell for you. It is both Spanish and English speaking creators playing on the same server,
mm-hmm.
using a mod that will in game do live translation and dictation of what they're saying.
Oh, so that's awesome.
Players will just speak Spanish, and above their heads, a little chat bubble will pop up in English to translate it for the English speaking players and vice versa. And it's imperfect. And a big aspect of it has been this kind of cultural barrier breakdown and seeing the English creators start learning more Spanish and vice versa.
That's awesome.
And learning translations. There's a really great moment I saw recently where massive Spanish streamer and Filza, massive English speaking streamer, were out and going around and doing a thing, and they're just talking back and forth, and then suddenly it clicks. It's like, oh, you're the guy. You're the guy who did this thing that I saw years ago, which drove me to start doing creating, and it was across language barriers. It was
That's
across
awesome, dude.
And it's such a transformative moment. And to see that be done, and I will briefly address, yes, there are other creators who have claimed to have done this first and are doing shady things in the background. Dream! Yeah. Anyway. But it's massive. And I love what it's doing, because it is, that is genuinely changing the game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because if you can do that, and you can have live translation, if anybody has an iPhone or a Google phone, you can put your headphones in and get live translation of a conversation. You could just speak to somebody in real life and yeah. completely break down language barriers.
Yeah.
To see the segmentation of online communities, which have already kind of moved from shared geography to shared interest, now be able to do shared interest without
a language barrier,
the limitation yeah. of language being into there as well. You're talking full-on Tower of Babel situation.
Well, like, so here's
how much bigger can it get?
Here's how wild it's going to be in the next 3 to 5 years, and I'm going to project this right now. AI voice recognition and AI voice imitation is already getting good enough that people have done full like Kanye West songs without ever having touched it, because they can basically perfectly imitate Kanye's voice. Within the next 3 to 5 years, I will put money on it. You will say a bunch of syllables and you will have a fully digital online persona that speaks you in your tone, in your vocalization, and the way you would naturally say things, but in another language perfectly through a one-to-one system.
I mean, we're already, to go back to Mr. Beast, right? He hired people to dub his videos.
Yeah.
And voice actors in dozens of countries.
Dozens of languages.
Dub his videos in dozens of languages and dozens of countries. Like, to dub his videos to other languages. Now imagine if that is done where instead of across 7 different channels, it's one channel and you just pick the audio track for your language. Like, you can do that on TV, to go back to. You can yep. have SAP, you can push a button, and you get a different audio. Having that in on a live stream or on a VOD. Online,
and my point is the AI is going to make it so it's you. It doesn't even have to change. Like, it's literally going to be your voice redone into Spanish. So instead of me sitting here saying, hi, hello. Yeah. Hola.
Hola.
¿Cómo estás? Sí. Like, bienito.
It is exciting, but yeah. it is also kind of terrifying. I'm not going to lie.
I'm getting over my terror. I can't anymore. If I'm going to be terrified at this point, like, what else am I going to do? Like, yeet?
No, it's not to the point where it's like terrified where I'm going to go off grid and go in a bunker or anything else like that. But it's forced me to think about things that I hadn't before.
Yeah.
Even something as simple as when I started seeing the videos of Obama and Trump and Biden and Kanye West playing Minecraft together, which are funny. They're very funny.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. But two things have come to my mind. One, I wonder if we could upload a short and do a what's the main one? It's not re-speecher. It's
Descript?
I forget. Descript.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could do a descript of my voice and do a short without me actually voicing it, and I wonder if people would notice.
The answer is yes. There's a lot of channels who have done it. You have to get really, really good at it. There's a couple channels who literally make like their entire thing, of course, is like AI bullshit and like figure out if they can do it, where they did two things, which is number one, full person recreation using AI and full voice and full like graphics and other things. Like everything was AI generated, the whole thing, the script, them, like it was a whole thing. It was very, very wild. It took them, I think, 3 months to get to the point where the audio was passable. Everything else was a little funky. And it took them almost, I think it was 4.5 before people like couldn't tell the difference between the stand-in and the person.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of work.
And that's where we are now.
Yeah.
Right? As this technology continues to improve, if it depends on where on that curve we're at. We've peaked on this current new wave of technologies, then it'll take a little longer. If we're at the beginning of that curve, oh boy, where it's going to go. So the two things that I thought about is, one, I had to think of potentially having like a passphrase to talk with my family so that they would know it's me, because there's enough of my voice online that theoretically that could be done without consent.
It's like true.
Doing it with consent is one thing. Doing sure, it without true. Is another.
Yes.
So having like a vocal passphrase or like a check identity verification almost. It was a weird thought.
So
it was something that crossed my mind.
It's part of the reason. I'm not even going to lie. It's part of the reason my daughter is going by her middle name. Part of the reason we are like literally in public. My daughter will go by her middle name for family. Because, and there's a variation on it. So it's not super specific. You know it. Right? I'm not going to say it here just in case. Right. But.
Yeah,
daughter goes by middle name because if we ever go up and she's anywhere out and somebody comes up to her and goes, hey, insert first name here. It's not family.
Yeah.
But no, they didn't come to pick you up. They didn't come to do this. Nothing. Nothing. Instantaneous no, because they don't know.
At this point, the name thing is too far gone for us. But Sin and I, we definitely had a conversation about a passphrase challenge or something like that. Just like this person is safe. Like this person is safe for when somebody that they don't know, but even the fact that it could theoretically be my voice on the phone and be my voice and not having like a certain passphrase or something like that. So as they get older and there's more cognizance of something like that, there's something that's been on my mind.
Yeah.
But the thing I'm thinking about with voice, real life voice transcription or something else like that, we're saying a video would be very hard to fake. Or especially like full body video.
Yeah.
But if you're playing Minecraft, you don't have a webcam on or something like that. Yeah. And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of creators who are like that. What could it theoretically take for having a near 24/7 up live stream where you have a Descript voice and you have one or a set of technicians who are typing responses to chat, or even you use an AI model to respond to certain things, you train it on what'll get you good bit donations or something like
that. I don't know if we should put this portion out into the world. I think this should be in our back pocket. I don't know why we're talking about this in public.
What you don't know is, just like Watchmen, we're not talking about this theoretically. We actually started that channel 2 weeks ago, and here's the data. No,
I wish.
That would be very smart. But
no, I seriously, like, streaming, it's going to be interesting.
Live streaming lives and dies on hours.
Not anymore.
I would say to build an audience, not to be a top level performer, but
that's
I think
fair.
To grow to some degree.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in the earlier stages of building a channel.
I mean, that's why YouTube's so big.
Putting the hours in for, if you want to grow with exclusively streaming.
Yes.
Putting the hours in for streaming is the only way to do it, because you only grow when you're live.
Yep.
So if you eliminate the human need for sleep and food and breaks, how much – I mean, we already saw completely artificial channels like the Seinfeld 24/7 channel, which got banned because it went very off the rails. But
it was hilarious.
There are other AI-powered channels that are out there that exist already.
Yeah.
And they have not been running 24/7. They've been running smaller streams, but I've seen some of them.
Yeah.
And I've seen clips from them. And it is very interesting how much, if you realistically think about a live stream, they do kind of similar. There is some level of commonality between a majority of them.
Yes.
So you could train a program to do certain things, to encourage certain behaviors.
I'm going to say it this way, and it's going to be really, really weird. People do not realize the amount of behaviors that they have that are borderline automated, like as a human being. And as such, you can continue that into viewer responses. Like, there's a reason negativity in certain versions like gets more clicks. There's a reason white backgrounds versus black backgrounds get more clicks. There's a reason for so many of these things psychologically. And the day is coming where somebody's going to create a perfect program for a certain subsection of the audience. And it's going to happen. There's a reason children's TV shows exist. Like, I don't think people understand, like, the actual implications of how that works as children, also into adults. There's a reason certain things like that exist. We're going to get to the point where, like, somebody's going to build the perfect learning channel for children. And the reason is because, this idea is coming from a video of Hugh Jackman the other day talking about how he mode switches language and accents. and he got the tip and trick from Johnny Depp, which is he created a sentence for himself that encapsulates every single vowel, consonant, sound, and so on and so forth needed to transition into the new language or the new accent. And so he can now say it like subconsciously or out loud, and he can instantaneously flip. And so he'll
it's that Winter Soldier kind of phrase.
Exactly.
To do it.
Can you imagine the fact that that is a type of thing that being incorporated into content that like mode switches people into like being more engaged or less engaged or so on and so forth? Because we already have that.
Boxcar.
Right?
17. Boxcar. Balding. Basement. Minecraft. 100 days. And then I'm just activated and I go into content mode. Hey everybody, how's it going?
You get what I'm saying? It's like that is a level of things that exists, and we're going to start seeing it in more content because it has to be.
Yeah,
because everything's about attention. It's an attention war.
It is very interesting because right now, even with human creating all the content on the platform, authenticity is a problem. And authenticity is a factor that will either very much matter for a viewer or very much doesn't.
Yeah.
I will say that. And to just only have to worry about authentic versus inauthentic humans creating content has already caused a lot of turmoil on the platform for some creators and everything else.
Yeah.
Now level on the fact of an entirely automated process where it's not even an authentic person creating content. And 25 years from now, when AIs are people, I apologize retroactively. Please don't cancel me in 2040 for this random statement that I'm saying now. And I'm prefacing that now, so when the Terminators come, they will spare me. But today, with today's technology, AIs are not yet fully people. And the fact that while that is the case, they can be utilized and leveraged by people to vastly improve the way that certain things can perform. And not just in the content space. I used ChatGPT to help me write out some stuff for my day job the other day. As far as like a few plans on a few different things that I don't want to get into because I don't want to talk about my day job too much. I 100% use it. It probably saved me a half an hour worth of work.
Yeah.
And I gave it a prompt, a very detailed prompt, and then give me all of this information, and I got all of it, and I took it out of there, and I formatted it, and I put it together, and I put together a plan, and I sent it off, and everybody who got that email was like, this is a good idea, let's go forward with this. To your point of how much of human behavior is automated, how much of X, Y, or Z thing we do during our day job is automated. I don't think AI can eliminate creatives. I think the people who can effectively eliminate it, use AI and integrate it into their workflow, have a chance of boxing out creators who don't.
100%. I'm going to say it this way, which is going to be, people theorized this way, way back when, right? Like all the sci-fi writers, like forever ago, kind of basically made this point, which is we are going to reach a point technologically in which people are technically not needed, quote unquote, for jobs.
Post-scarcity society. Well, like, no, that's after you get past your resource scarcity. But
you don't even need to do that because like the resource scarcity gets solved society by this too. Like the robots are going to be able to do all of our food shit, dude. Like the robots are going to,
as long as robots don't, as long as robots don't experience human greed, we'll be fine. That is a big what if.
No, but I think you could, because they don't need the things that we need technically.
As
in some form,
I would say that. I would say when you talk about AIs, though, there's a lot of conversations about unconscious biases of humans being translated through.
There is. There's 100%.
There's the Amazon art. There's the articles about Amazon and the resume screening application.
Yep, there is. There's 100% a thing. But the point being,
a short version of, it's not one-to-one. Until we have true AI that exists independent of human cognition, I don't think we'll get there. I think we'll always have to deal with some level of human
But the point that I'm making is less that and saying like technology is going to rapidly get us to the point where there's not enough work for enough people to go around to consider the society based on availability of work to be able to live. like that statement right there is wild. So we don't have to get too much into it because it's a slippery slope to dive down into a lot of conversation.
That is predictive, and yeah, that is a very dangerous thing to go to because I don't see that transition happening easily. That's all I will say.
No, but the point being is technology is going to enable that far faster than people think. Probably. As such, like, we now have to begin to think about all of these things that previous generations didn't even have to conceive of in terms of a long time horizon. Like, let's think about the fact that 10 years ago, nobody had to think about the internet as a generation of infinite knowledge in regards to, like, getting something to do something for you that you don't even understand. Like 10 years ago, it was, I have to be able to find the information on the internet to do this thing. Today, it is, right? Right? Today, it is, hey, can you generate me an entire diet for koalas and then figure out where to purchase it at the best price so that I get the best, like, nutrition for my koalas in my specific nation, in my specific subsection, and then also, like, make sure you solve for the fact that, like, this would be the shipping time that I need to order on a regularity to make sure they're fed every single month. And you don't have to understand anything about what you just said. Like, nothing. It can be done.
You just need to be able to type it in or in some cases, say it.
And that's my point.
Scream it at Siri and then you'll get
it. And we've breached that gap that says, like, you don't actually have to have knowledge about things. Like, previously, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you had to at least have some semblance of understanding of, like, what you were trying to do, what you needed to do in these different steps, because we're at the point now where you can go, hey, I have thing, what do I do to take care of it? And it'll give you that. And then from that, you just keep expanding and expounding because you don't even actually have to know the whole thing. Now, granted, it helps because to your point about the creatives, like, it gets some stuff really wrong. Like, you have to, like you have to know. It gets some stuff really wrong. And anybody who's tried to use it for coding knows that, like, very, very well. Like, it'll, like, put shit in places you actually don't want it to because it doesn't understand the rest of your code. But it's getting better.
But the fun thing is you can give it that code and then you can say, optimize this or correct the error on line 23. And then it can, to some degree.
Theo had a problem. I don't know if you saw Theo's tweet. Theo had last week. He sat down and was like, I can't figure this shit out. Called to closest friends that he normally would. They couldn't figure it out. Two friends couldn't figure it out. He asked his whole Discord. They couldn't figure it out. Put it in GPT. Solved it in 27 seconds.
Yep. But then there's also a story about ChatGPT about, tell me news about allegations of misconduct at universities in the state of Arkansas or something like that. And it took a real professor's name and fabricated a story about misconduct.
Yeah,
because it was just doing predictive text. It is, until it is truly connected to the internet where it can cite its own sources, there is no way that it doesn't require human intervention.
Yes.
But doing something along the lines of saying, given X keywords on Y video, write me a really good description that'll get good SEO rankings. We're doing that. We're doing that right now. And it's working. We found, I'll give the spoiler. We found that if we put Minecraft in the first 7 words of our videos, we experienced 7 to 10 words. We experienced a 30% uptick on the video for no other reason than something about it keys the YouTube algorithm into knowing what audience this video is for. And that is, you would think it would be the title, and it wasn't. It was the description.
It's pairing.
Explicitly says is.
It's pairing the two.
Yeah.
They pull metadata from it. Yeah, they pull. They acknowledge they pull metadata from it. They just don't tell you how.
They don't tell you how. And now we've kind of sort of, at least in our very specific case, we've pseudo reverse engineered it to find out something else.
So we're
very down the rabbit hole on this one, which is fun.
It's 45 minutes in, 50 minutes in. So let's kind of wrap here.
I'm gonna wrap here with, again, speaking about matters of scale.
Yes.
And the logarithmic scale that exists on, or exponential scale that exists on YouTube. In the last month, based off of the average watch hours on the channel, this is what put, because I looked at this after yesterday's stream, which was actually, honestly, the best non-rated stream we've ever done.
Yeah.
So without any major raids on the YouTube side, we did have some raids come in on Twitch, but without any major raids on the YouTube side, it was the best and most viewed stream we've ever had.
Yeah.
By on YouTube by a factor of like 50%. And part of that was just leveraging some of these things that we've learned, picking a really good topic, just nailing it on the timing.
I'm glad the idea worked.
I did the math, and for a 3-hour stream, 76 days of people's time went into watching it. Which, think about that, right? So I did the math, and to put something into perspective, for our channel, which is a relatively small channel in the grand scheme of YouTube, 57 years worth of time was spent watching our videos in the month of March. Now put that to the tens or hundreds of millions of views that go onto like a Mr. Beast channel or something like that. And yeah. Just to your point of having to think about the internet in a very different way, having to think about the existence of information, the persistence of it, the creativity of it. How that's where we're at with a majority human-based workflow.
Yeah.
Where that will go as more and more of that those tasks become automated, I don't think we can even comprehend those numbers right now.
Yeah.
And that's wild.
So, on that note...
existential crisis... On that existential crisis, thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. If you liked this episode, a positive rating would be super wonderful as we're trying to tell yet another algorithm that we have something of value here. Thank you to our patrons who get to watch the actual video version of this. If you want to join them, patreon.com/lagundo. And we will see you in a couple weeks.
Have a great one.
To each other, everyone. Bye.
Bye.